Council State Affairs Committee meeting ordered. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 1991. Time is 8:47. We have a quorum with Representatives Moyo, Choquette, Bruckman, Baker, and Cadena. On the agenda today, we'll be taking up Senate Bill 98 relating to qualify certain persons for permanent fund dividends, and House Bill 41 relating to permanent fund dividends for Alaskans on military duty. I think what I'll do is take up House Bill 41 first, although Senate Bill 98 was obviously the vehicle that will be used. Representative Martin, would you join us, please? House Bill 41, an act relating to qualifications for permanent fund dividends. Representative Martin is the prime sponsor. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to speak on the permanent fund dividend checks. I agree in using Senate Bill 98 as the vehicle because I think that the department needs assistance right now to be given a green light as to what they can do in this crisis pertaining to military people and their families. With that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak on the differences between House Bill 41 and the Senate bill, and make recommendation that mostly the subcommittee for the Veterans Affair recommended. They did some good work here, and with my understanding with the administration, in helping to smooth out some of the difficulties that are coming along with. In the first section of the Senate bill, sir, I hope you don't mind if I relate to both these bills at the same
Not
time,
at all.
Because I think it's important. In Senate Bill 98, that's a good section. I very much agree with that. However, I'm a little concerned about the date of effectiveness. It says January the 1st, 1992. And, you know, we can have an emergency anytime. I don't think that this time is needed to put a date there, except that it may call for a handicap somewhere down the line. So if we don't need a date, except for the whole bill, July 1st, everything else is agreed with, 1991. So I just want to point that out. There may be some reason for 92, but secondly, another major difference between 41 and this vehicle before it's 98 is the 12 consecutive months of 24. And while we have a chance to correct the law, you know, the state Supreme Court ruled out 24 months as being unconstitutional. So if we can correct the law at the same time and say 12 months, consecutive month for civilians or anyone, and that will come under section 4323005A. I'll get into the 4 years versus 2 years military return in a month. Well, why not do it now? The 4 year return, sir, was requested by the military officials themselves, and in my mind, the major purpose of this military bill is to protect the born and raised Alaskans. Now, we have approximately, to the best estimate I've been given from the Defense Department, between 8 and 12,000 born and raised. And I want to emphasize that. Your daughter, your son, your cousin, whoever, Alaskan, choose to serve in the military, and therefore they suddenly find themselves discriminated against and can't get home for one reason or another. And military person very seldom gets sent back to their own state for military service. Some do in Alaska, but it's very seldom the case. Especially the real important case is our young daughters and sons who were competing for military academies. And it's impossible for them during the school year to come to Anchorage or come to their hometown for vacation like any other college student does. They are immediately sent out in the field or sent on a ship or sent someplace, and then they come right back to school. And it has been proven impossible for those people who are honored by our congressional delegation and given these special entrances to the military colleges. So that's just one example. We also have another example of a young man on the National Guard, and he was sent out to college by the National Guard, our National Guard, and in North Carolina, and of course he had to take his family, and he's getting medical degrees, where he can't get back, so the whole family was discriminated against. They just don't have the money. They tell us the best thing is that 4 years will average the term of tour of duty for a person joining the military, whether they're in the upper brackets of the officer or enlisted person. If they don't come back in 4 years, amen. They also get a reason. Normally, in the turnover, under one of the Marine Corps order to give me was that, you know, if you ship over, we're going to give you a free ship home. And that was nice. Some people didn't realize you could get to go home anyway if you didn't ship over. But that's the incentive there. Second is the important part in the Senate bill on line 12, page 1. They put here qualified as of 1990, and we had an add-on or otherwise qualified for 1991, and that's on page 3, line 8. The difference there is, so you may have qualified for 1990, but since it is a 12-month limitation by our state Supreme Court, we have to say that those who were qualified for 91 dividends should also be exempt for this emergency military people, because some of them got here in time, and as you know, our Marine Corps detachment was called, Air Force detachments were called, and in one case, I guess, a National Guard was called out. Well, then they didn't qualify for the 91 period. They were qualified for the 91 period, but they didn't for the 90, and so there we should allow both of those cases. In the health bill version, two important things were added that I thought Max Gruenberg did some real good research on this website that Gruenberg and should be employed in Senate Bill 98. That's on page 3, specifically line 12 and also line 22. In the first amendment, so they talked about May execute by power of attorney authorizing. A lot of the military people may be all over, and the application goes to the home address where the wife is there, the mother is there, whoever, and they may ship it forward. Well, we've had a number of cases where some people didn't get it in time and were not able to file in time of the application period. If you cut military mail, you know, it takes a long time. I guess the Gulf War proved that, how long it takes to get the mail sometimes. So if the power of attorney can be extended to members of the family, that's a big plus to help our two Alaskan citizens. In line 22, personal representatives of the individual to state may sign on behalf of that individual. And this is just a preliminary application so that when he or she comes back home, then they can fill the official application. This also happens on, I understand the airports have more of a problem with this than the Army, where they're called out on TDY, temporary duty someplace, and they may be stationed out for 90 days or 120 days and then come back. I don't know why, but it's a typical thing that they use. And even if it's just 3 or 4 of our military people who have been tried because they didn't make arrangement for someone to sign their application, I think that you know, that's the least thing on their mind when they're called to do it someplace else. Otherwise, sir, I sure appreciate you expediting this, and I think it will alleviate an awful lot of frustration and problems with our military people who think that because they chose that as a career of being treated as secondary citizens, and as I say, my major thrust here is the born and raised Alaskans who truly probably more Alaskans than I'll ever be because of the heritage. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Martin. Are there questions from the committee? Hearing none, thank you, Representative Martin.
Okay. Can I have the register, please?
Anyone here from Representative or Senator Schultz's office?
There he is.
Here comes the
we were just about to ship it back to a subcommittee here. Senator, join us, please.
Thank you.
We also have before us Senate Bill 98 by Senator Schultz, an act relating to eligibility for permanent fund dividends for certain individuals. Senate Bill 98 would enable the Commissioner of Revenue to waive certain eligibility requirements In order to qualify, military people are absent from the state due to a national military emergency. Senator?
Basically, I think the legislation is self-explanatory. It was introduced to make sure that no person that was serving in the Persian Gulf was subjected to any kind of a hardship or whatever in getting their permanent fund dividend check. We worked with the administration on this piece of legislation, and I believe it's received a certain amount. I believe it has been amended to take care of the soldier that was killed in action, too. Right?
Yeah. Yes. Representative Shoket.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, you didn't get to hear Representative Martin's overview of both bills and a couple of the areas that he would like to see incorporated in your bill. If you have do you have a copy of the House bill, sir?
No, I don't.
Can we get this? Okay. And Terry, you can refresh me if I didn't pick up everything that you said, but on page 3, line 12, that paragraph, and line 20, that paragraph, were both recommended amendments by Representative Grunberg, did you say, sir?
He's the main one that worked it out.
Okay. I wondered if you could comment.
Page 3?
Page 3 of the House, 41, which deals with the power of attorney on section B there on line 12, and with a personal representative of the individual state on which is C on line 20.
Timely applications.
It's already taken care of.
That's already incorporated in this legislation, allowing the power of attorney. Yeah. It's already incorporated in Senate Bill 98.
Both of those items.
Senator Schultz, there is a committee substitute we have not adopted, and it is on the table. Everyone should have in front of it. What the committee substitute does, and it's here for discussion purposes only at this time, on your bill, the Veterans and Military Affairs bill, page 1, line 7, right after the United States, or for spouses and dependents of that individual, the committee substitute would take that little phrase out. And on page 2, line 28 through 30, it would remove the spouse and dependents. And the thought being here is that my understanding, the original intention of this bill was to deal with people that went to Desert Storm.
Exactly.
And that I think that Alaskan people have shown or indicated over the years that they really don't want loopholes in the law for people that aren't really living in Alaska and staying here.
Absolutely.
And if the reason for this bill is really to hit those people, most of those spouses and children would not have left because those people would be coming back to Alaska. We're not talking here about people that just traveled or went down, got reassigned to Fort Ord. We're talking about people that went to Desert Storm.
Well,
and so
go
ahead, Sam.
Okay, if I may, there is a problem in that you could have an Alaskan family, for example, that could be shipped to Fort Ord. They get out, and the person in the military is shipped over to the Persian Gulf. Then the family is more or less, you know, that they are required to come back also, but they may, his leave is frozen. He can't go, he can't come back and meet his two-year thing. So the family is probably more or less tied there in that they would have to, you know, absent her husband or whatever, come back to Alaska in order to meet the residency requirements. So it was intended to meet those people that were serving in Desert Storm, that their family members or whatever that were stationed somewhere, whether it's California, whether it's Virginia, whatever, that they also are entitled to that. When the person comes back, then they have to, you know, but during the Desert Storm activity, they were, that's what we tried to incorporate in this. So there is a possibility that you could have a family that was living in or being stationed in Fort Bragg or whatever, and their husband is shipped over, or maybe it's the woman or whatever, shipped over to the Persian Gulf, and it more or less restricts them from being able to come back. And we're just asking for that time period.
Well, as I understand your bill, with the second page on here.
Why don't you come on up here and tell me?
I'm going to call him. In fact, why don't you pull over and let me call him up. And let Mr. Bush. As I understand this bill, the way it's written, anybody who lived in Alaska and qualified for the 1990 dividend, who's in the military,
yeah,
is going to be able to receive it for the next year under this bill. Mr. Quitch, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Tom Williams. I'm the director of the Public Fund Dividend Division for the Alaska Department of Revenue.
Tom Williams.
And we have worked with the Senator and trying to draft some legislation here which will not only grant equity to those folks serving in the military and their families and spouses, or families and parents, but it's also easy to administer. When we first approached this whole problem, we were trying to narrow it in on those folks serving in Desert Storm. And then we started to analyze a little further and determined that it would be an administrative nightmare. The easiest way to administer it without any additional cost, and what we determined would be reasonably equitable, would be to not only grant the waiver for all military and their families. Because there's two classes two groups of military, those that actually went to Desert Storm and those that were living or stationed elsewhere whose leaves were canceled and effectively prevented from coming back. And so both were actually affected by the fact that Desert Storm existed. With respect to the families and their dependents, because everybody's leave was canceled, we didn't think it was reasonable to expect them to, because the spouses, the military spouses' leave was canceled, to pull up roots and have to come back to Alaska when they might have otherwise, if their spouse's leave hadn't been canceled. We just figured it would be a much easier and equitable way to deal with the problem. And since we were limiting to the 1 year, to the 91 dividend under the extraordinary circumstances, and that's all the further we wanted to go, we felt that would be the simplest and easiest way to administer it. There are people, because the dividend law allows all Alaska residents to receive a dividend and makes military service an allowable absence, there are a significant number of military folks that are Alaska residents that don't actually physically live here, as the Senator suggested, maybe stationed and live in Fort Bragg or the Philippines or Germany or across the country or the world. And they, under the two-year return rule, are normally required to come home. This would waive that for everybody.
Has this two-year return rule ever been challenged in court?
Not to my knowledge. It's
probably unconstitutional, isn't it?
Hope not.
It probably is, though. I think
I just, not being a lawyer, I would defer to Mr. Bush.
Well, the two-year return rule applies to military people only, is that correct?
No, it does not. It applies to every Alaskan that is absent from Alaska. It's not discriminatory with respect to here is a general broad-based base to your return rule. If you qualify for a dividend in all other respects, you're a resident, you live here, or you're out on allowable absence, if you're out on allowable absence, to your return rule requires you to come home once every 2 years, and that at least once every 2 years. As a general rule, we have found that most Alaskans that end up do coming home at least once every 2 years.
And what is an allowable absence?
There are numerous allowable absences. There are some designated in statute, the most obvious being to serve in the military, to serve in the congressional district, as a congressman or senator. You can be out to go to school, post-secondary education. You can be out to serve on the staff of a senator or the congressman. Those functions, be out to serve in the Peace Corps. There are various allowable absences that, although the statute defines residency as folks who are physically here, legislature recognize that there are good reasons for some people to retain their Alaska residency and be allowed to be out. So, but the two-year return rule is not exclusive to the military. It applies to everybody.
So because of that, then it probably is legal, since it applies to everybody.
That's correct.
So Representative Martin, who wanted to change it to 4 years resident, that would set up two different standards for two different reasons.
That's correct.
Representative Martin.
Sir, on that one point, yes, the U.S. Department of Defense has sent forward under Secretary Cheney to the U.S. Justice Department challenge to the two-year return Touch Alaska 2 years. And so that case is still viable because I talked to Senator Stevens when he was up here just last week or 2 weeks ago. And the U.S. Defense Department went to challenge it because they don't feel that they should be responsible in making sure that Alaskans are home every 2 years, that if other states take Pennsylvania, who's very, very generous to the military people, if they should also put a two-year return rule on any state that gives any benefit to the military, it would really seriously disrupt the whole military mission of placing men and women where they are needed at the time of emergency or just even at peacetime. So they have studied the case for about a year and a half and been given permission to forward a case from the U.S. Justice Department to the U.S. Defense Department to the U.S. Justice Department. And Senator Stevens felt that it should be changed not under the Soldiers and Sailors Act, but he felt that they have a much better case under the Freedom to Travel Act that is in the U.S. Constitution. And of course, our founding fathers had a great reason for that in the colonial days. But it is viable now. I have talked to Commander Kubiak of the U.S. Defense Department, and he knows that these bills are pending, and Senator Stephen does too. And so, therefore, they want to see what the legislature would do this period before we go any further. But there's potential cases, as you said.
Thank you, Representative Martin. Could you explain to me why they have a zero fiscal note on this?
They have a zero fiscal note on this because basically the way we would approach that is we would let individual know through our basic advertising process on the during the application period that we would simply instruct them to line out the portion that said that they had been in state for in the last 2 years. And since we asked a question on the current 99 or 91 application form whether or not you're in the military and we can associate military spouses, it's not a problem to process that.
Well,
there isn't.
Would the fund pay out more money under this bill?
Oh, no.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Because no one can make application that is not already eligible. They had to be eligible prior to, and they had to be eligible for the permanent fund. This doesn't open up any loopholes to make go back and make someone eligible in retroactively. No, it doesn't do that at all. They had to be eligible to start with, so.
So if they were eligible in 91, they're automatically eligible in 92. This isn't making any other people eligible for 92?
No.
Then wouldn't be now?
Senator's right. We're talking about the 91, the current dividend.
Right.
If they were otherwise eligible, and the only thing that they didn't meet was the two-year return rule, this waives that provision. It doesn't waive any other provision with respect to eligibility. There is a provision in there that says that they also had to be eligible for the 90 dividend. And the reason is because we didn't want folks who had dropped out of eligibility because they had been gone from Alaska for 5 or 10 years and never come home to slip in under this particular waiver. So that's why there's the language that said that you also had to be eligible for the 90 dividend. Mm-hmm. So that there wasn't a loophole. It relates, and it does not affect the 91 or the 92 dividend. It's only affecting the 91 dividend, this year's dividend, the one we're filing right now.
No distinction between being eligible for the 90 and actually having received it.
That's correct.
Say that you're not eligible, you may think that you are eligible. And, you know, that can be an ongoing process to prove eligibility. But it would, well, I mean, that's not going to.
Mr.
Lamb?
Mr. Chairman, there may have been individuals who were eligible who for some reason didn't apply. And so it doesn't say that you were paid. It simply says that you were eligible for the 90 dividend. And we would determine that based on the way we determine eligibility for the 91.
So you're saying this bill will not make more people in 91 receive their check than is already the case right now. Is that correct?
That would have been the case had Desert Storm not occurred. It only mitigates the effect of Desert Storm, the cancellation of leaves, and the hardship of people to return to Alaska. It's the only thing that it does in its present form. And that was the purpose. Not to expand the number of people that were eligible, but primarily not to unduly reduce that.
Well, let me put my question in a different way then. Do you have an estimate of how many people will receive a 91 check that would not have received a 91 check because of this bill? No matter what the circumstances, do we have an estimate of how many people will get this check that without this bill passing would not get the check?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have an estimate of that because I don't know how many people in the military and their families have been unable to return to Alaska because of Operation Desert Storm. And I'd have no way, absent polling every member of the military, every Alaskan member of the military that filed, say, a 90, to determine that. There's no reasonable way to estimate that. If all those military members had decided to come home for a convention last year before Operation Desert Storm occurred, then it's a moot point for them. If they had all been planning to come on a moose hunt last fall and it was all canceled, then it would affect every one of them. And I just don't have a number, and I don't have a good way of coming up with an estimate.
All right, so saying that this is a zero fiscal note, meaning, in my mind, that the permanent fund is not going to pay out any more money in checks in 91 as compared to 90, is not a true statement. That there will be people, obviously, or else you're not going to introduce a bill. There will be people that will receive this their check in 91 that would not receive it without this bill.
That is correct.
And so, in some way, shape, or form, there should be an indication that this bill is going to cost the permanent fund money.
It's not going to cost the permanent fund any more money than it would have normally cost them had Desert Storm not happened. It's going to X number of dividend checks, we're going to go out. Desert Storm came along. It happened. There are people that could not make it back to the state of Alaska to meet their residency thing. Had that Desert Storm not happened, they would have been here and they would have made their applications. Okay. So this in no way, shape, or form is taking more money from the permanent fund dividend program than would normally have taken place had Desert Storm not existed.
Well, that argument is just a hard one for me to buy, Senator, because for whatever reason, those people may not have come back. I guess what I'm looking at is somebody comes to Alaska.
Yeah.
Somebody comes to Alaska in the military, and they stay here 2 years, and they say, now I'm an Alaskan resident. And they stay in the military for 20 years. They can, in essence, if they pop back in every 2 years, there can be Alaska residents forever and for those whole 20 years in the military and get their permanent fund dividend. Correct? Correct?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Civilian, too.
But we're not trying to, I mean, that's a different issue. That's a separate issue. I mean, and even what Representative Martin is talking about, if you're going to increase the, you know, the residency requirement or decrease it or whatever, I mean, that's a separate issue. We're only trying to address a problem that existed when leave was actually frozen, and these people could not make it back, and Desert Storm happened.
Of course, your bill doesn't say that. If your bill said your leave was canceled, then you're qualified. It doesn't. It says everybody that was qualified last year is qualified this year. Pretty blanket statement. But you know, and it seems like the department should have some way of estimating, you know, how many people were out there that received checks from the military last year would not meet the 2 year requirement. At least you could say there were X number of people last year that were outside on their second year. That should be in your computer. And that would have to be come back during this year to receive their check. And at least you would have a maximum number of people that you knew you were talking about.
1990 was a rather unique year. In all other years, we had data captured whether an individual was a member of the military. For some reason, in 1990, the department decided not to ask that question. So the 1990 application, we can't easily segregate on our computer system how many members of the military filed. We've got that question is on the 91 form, and it's easily identifiable. So first of all, would be difficult for us to get that population. Would not be an easy process. Second, even when we did ask the question as to whether or not you were a member of the military, and we could identify your spouse and family background, I don't believe we have data captured when last day that you were in the state, so that we could analyze that. We can give you a rough idea of how many military members of that filed out of state, say in 89, so we know the maximum number. But we can't, as you suggest, we can't easily make that estimate. With respect to your other question as far as the fiscal note, since the amount appropriated for dividends is simply divided by the number of eligible applicants, there's no difference in the amount that's appropriated for dividends. It just matters how much the dividend is. If this legislation passes, say there's 510,000 people that apply and receive a dividend. That means a certain dollar amount of dividend. If this legislation did not pass and there were, say, 10,000 people that, because they could not get back to Alaska, were excluded, and now we only had that pot of money divided by 500,000 people, the dividend goes up and we just don't pay 10,000 folks. But the actual dollar amount of the appropriated to the dividend fund doesn't change. The fact that we want to take a broad approach makes it easy to administer, and therefore there's no additional administrative costs by segregating out families from those that were actually in Desert Storm from those whose leaves were canceled.
Okay.
That's why we took the broad approach, that there wouldn't be any additional administrative costs in conjunction with the basic compassionate view and of this one-time approach.
Okay, so I understand you have a zero fiscal note because individuals' checks will go down, the total amount of money spent will not.
That's correct. Well, they won't go down from what they would have been if Desert Storm hadn't occurred. They won't go down. It's just that they won't go up because we excluded people from the dividend because of Desert Storm. I mean, the rest of Alaskans don't get a windfall, basically, in their dividend checks because we didn't hold these folks harmless. It's an important distinction.
You know, this is one of those apple pie bills. You know, you vote against it, but I tell you, I don't feel guilty here of drilling you a little bit and trying to understand where this comes, because I think apple pie is also permanent fund checks, and I don't think people of Alaska want to blanketly give permanent fund checks to people that aren't living in Alaska, and I honestly think we have some real loopholes here. If there is a way to do what Representative Martin wanted to do, and say that somebody was born and raised here, you know, and made sure that they were real Alaskan people, they got their check, that you know as well as I do, we can't do that, and there is loopholes. Somebody can be here for 2 years, and there's ways for them to get that permanent fund check for many years to come. And I disagree with it. And the problem's obviously in the courts that we can't. And this just, in my mind, helps perpetuate that. Because we're blanketly saying, if you qualify this year, you're going to qualify next year. And you can say, well, it's because of leaves. And I say, I don't buy that argument. We were saying your leave was canceled. That's a reason that you were coming back and you were going to be here your time. But that's not the case. We're blanketly giving it to everybody. And I'm going to move this bill out. I'm not going to hold it up. But I think we're treading on. It's kind of like the longevity bonus. You know, people come in here and they want to give another little benefit. And every time you do, every time we increase something, and there's good arguments for increasing it, but then we put the program more in jeopardy because it costs no money. Well, this one here, with your explanation, is correct. We're not costing us more money, but we're certainly diluting the fund by ensuring that more people qualify. And I suspect the percentage of those that are going to qualify because of this bill, I would suspect that the percentage is very small of people who I consider real Alaskans. And that's the problem I have. Although, Senator, I will not hold the bill. I will move the bill on, and I'm sure with its implications it will have received a very favorable vote on the House floor. Go ahead.
Okay. There is no way that this bill is intended, because I agree with you on the issue. I do not have a hell of a lot of sympathy for people that come up here and spend 2 years or a tour of duty in the military and become an Alaskan resident and turn around and go back out and spend 20 years in the military, and all they have to do is buy an airplane ticket and stop by and visit Alaska once every 2 years. I don't have a hell of a lot of sympathy for those people. And I would like to see something changed to, in fact, now I do have sympathy for those people that are true Alaskans that went into the military, so on and so forth, that because of their career and that, they, I want to see their permanent fund dividend check, be able to continue. But you're right, there are a lot of people that are exploiting this program, they're taking advantage of it, that that are ripping us off, that are not true Alaskans. When they do retire, they're probably not going to retire in the state of Alaska, so they can take advantage of us for whatever the year. So I agree with that. Desert Storm came along, and it's a separate issue. And if there's another way to put more pressure on these people in the military, I certainly do not have any problems with that at all.
On that point, there is a way, and the military, they have certain confidential information they can't get out. But their estimates are truly that we have between 8,000 and 12,000 born and bred Alaskans. Now, that can be verified with ease. Number one, your military jacket shows where you come from. Number two, your Social Security number. I think in this state it's all 574. Okay, so the department can tell who is here.
If you have a social.
Huh?
If you get a social security.
Well, in most cases, you have to have who you have it. But, as a matter of fact, everyone has to, even children have the problem with the IRS.
They don't have to get in here. I'm sorry to interrupt, but they don't have to get in here.
Right. So there is ways to identify what I'm concerned about, the true born and raised Alaskans. And once we get to that point, not in this bill, we can have the department say, look, we want a better clarification. But that's after this one's passed. I'll fight the other issue later.
Representative Breckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we have Mr. Williams here. I'd like to ask a question about if the average person applicant for the permanent fund dividend dies at the point and can't apply. They lived here during the proper period, but they can't apply because they're dead. Can their estate apply for them?
Representative Breckman through the chair. The general rule is that, no, if you die, you don't, the estate cannot apply for it. And more importantly, if you die in whatever accident, tragedy it may be, before the end of the eligibility period, you can't apply. The only reason that we supported and suggested this particular language that would allow a personal representative to apply, which is, again, not a general part of the program, was because of the very unique circumstances related to Operation Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. Because individuals that might have been stationed in the Gulf War Zone during the conflict, and you've got to remember this was drafted when we didn't know how long that conflict would actually go on. Recognizing that those individuals had been denied the opportunity, perhaps, to really apply on time, and they might have been in the heat of battle killed before they had an opportunity to apply. Mm-hmm. Because of the unique circumstances, we said, okay, in that circumstance, we'll go ahead and it would make sense to let a personal representative of the estate apply. But the general rule, that's not the case. And the general rule is that if you die in a car accident on the 30th of March in downtown Juneau, that you're not eligible then. That's why the original bill, with respect to this one section, talks about the estate applying, had a person dying April 1st through June 30th, the application period. It's been amended here to January 1st January 1st through June 30th, which really means that anybody that was killed prior to the end of the application period was still eligible. That's not something we really support.
Right. See, I have a problem with, again, two classes of people. I happen to know a person who signed their application on their deathbed in the hospital and then died a few hours later, and so their family, they got the check. But if that person had died a half a day earlier, then they got the money. I think it's... I'm supporting this bill, but I find it disturbing that we're sitting on two classes.
Representative
White.
Oh, sorry,
Betty,
were you done?
Thanks, Chairman. When this two-year residency was put in place a couple of years ago, whenever it was, one of the arguments I think that was made, and I think you would call it, you would use the word abuse, Senator Schultz, and it doesn't apply to the born and raised people, but I think one of the things that came out was, because of the way the military is set up, a career military, and this won't be applicable to all people because of the timing when you have a resident will ask you to be eligible for the permanent fund. Some career military at some point have to do a foreign posting, and they still allow Alaska as a foreign posting. Mm-hmm. So someone on a four-year hitch to Alaska, married dependents, comes here, immediately their wife and dependents sign up for checks, get them the whole full 4 years. The felony army doesn't get checks while he's here because he's fulfilling his foreign posting, so he doesn't have to go to Afghanistan or something. He's going to Alaska. We probably want to come anyway. And just before he leaves, as long as it's within that window we require, he switches his application, residency to Alaska, and then as soon as he leaves, he and his family get checks for however long. And he was a 20-minute Alaskan who was only, he was doing what's best for him.
Sure.
At, that abuse was brought up too. And it is a tough one. Because, you know, because they get a benefit for the way.
That's it.
And maybe at some point, are we going to be calling on the law enforcement?
Mr. Williams, did you want to respond to that? Yes, we have that same concern, and in fact, we adopted a regulation a few years ago that required you to be.
Wait a minute, you'd say 6 months, but you know, even so, the spouse could have been a 3-year one, but the only reason the husband wasn't was he was doing something else that was good for him. Was, yeah, oh, 6 months for us.
Mr. Chairman,
Ms. Williams,
we do have some recommended amendments to the to the bill. If you would, if you'd be kind enough to abstain those.
Pardon me, Ms. Williams,
we
you
do
say
have
that?
Some recommended changes that we, the department, would like to see in the language. And the reason we have some of those is that we were unable to testify on the military affairs.
What are your recommendations, Mr. Williams?
Working off of the military and veterans affairs version.
Mm-hmm. It is. I'm sorry, I'll just let you know what I'm talking about here. The judge rejected the plea agreement of the criminal charges with Exxon this morning. He said the fine wasn't anywhere near enough. Somebody pollutes so badly in our great state.
And they say nothing.
Continue, Mr. Wayne.
Thank you. Again, working on the
you heard
military
first here.
Affairs version.
Which one?
As Representative Martin suggested on page 1, line 14, changing that to 12, from 24 to 12 months, at least 12 months immediately preceding.
Why?
Because the residency requirement is now 12 months. As opposed to 24, like law was struck down. There was a 2-year residency requirement that was struck down. Now we're at a 1-year residency requirement. That's not to be confused with the 2-year return rule. Two separate issues.
Well, let me ask you a question before you go on, please.
Sure.
If they're not going to meet the 2-year residency requirement, they had to have been residents for at least 24 months.
There are two different issues, Mr. Chairman. One is the length of time that you have to be a resident. That is 12 months.
That's correct.
Then there's the 2-year return rule. You have to have been in the state at least once in the past 2 years.
That's correct.
You may have been 12 months, may have been a resident for the prior 12 months, but may have been out of state for nearly all of 2 years. You may have been stationed as an Alaska resident, enlisted in the military, been transferred out of state, and then you're required to come back every 2 years. Two different issues.
It still doesn't click with me. I realize I only think like a sixth grader here. Mm-hmm. But
teach a sixth grader.
If you're not meeting the 2-year residency requirement, that's what this bill.
There's no 2-year residency requirement.
Excuse me, coming back.
To your return rule.
The 2-year return rule. Then you had to have been a resident. Well, not necessarily immediately. Yeah, you're considered a resident, aren't you, even though you're gone?
That's correct.
So you had to have been a resident for 24 months prior.
No, the residency requirement. This statute references the certification that every individual must sign. Every individual, whether they're in state or out of state.
Oh, I see what you're saying. This is the general.
When you have your 91 dividend form,
this doesn't just apply to these people that are applying for it.
It applies to everybody.
I understand.
And as Representative Martin had suggested, we have an opportunity to clean it up because there's some other language that needs to be cleaned up.
All right.
And in fact, if you look at the 91 dividend form, it says at least 12 months right now. So it's cleaning.
Okay. Representative Moyer.
Thanks, Chairman. If we have the opportunity to clean up the need to, we probably should. I don't disagree with that. And I'm sorry to get off track a little. Maybe this is a question for law. Is that the kind of thing that the revisor of statutes would eventually clean up, or if we didn't do it, and how does that get fixed?
We asked the revisor, and the revisor, what the revisor did is actually there's an editorial note at the end of that which says that the 12-month reference in this section has been found unconstitutional by the courts and will be 12 months. That's the way they did it. Instead of actually changing the statute, they just put a note at the end.
So it has the same effect.
That was Mr. Bush, is that correct?
Yes.
Department of Law. Mr. Williams?
On page 2, lines 1 through 4, the committee proposal inserted the language in accordance with AS 4323-005A3, or that requirement has been waived under AS 4323-005F, and then deleted the language starting at some and ending with this application. Mm-hmm. The department would prefer to see the original language left in there with the following amendment to follow the words "this application," and that language to say, unless that requirement has been waived under AS 4323-005F. So this page, then, as we would propose it, would read, starting at the top of it, been physically present in the state of Alaska at some time during the period beginning July 1st, 2 years before the date of application and ending on the date of this date, on the date of this application, unless that requirement has been waived under AS 4323-005F. The reason is this. And we would want a similar amendment down on line 8 through line 11. The reason is this. Because this appears on the application form and every individual is required to sign it, we want them to know that they had to have been here at least once every 2 years. Instead of simply referencing a statute, they may not clearly understand that they were certifying that they had to have been here for 2 years.
Okay.
So we would like it as it is now with the amendment.
Okay. And then same on 8 and 9.
Same between lines 8 and 11, so that it would read, state of Alaska at some time during the period beginning July 1st, etc., this application, unless that requirement has been waived under AS 4323-005F. Identical language.
And we don't need an accordance with 4304A3 at all?
That's correct, because that is explained.
Okay.
Back up on line 6, that in the middle of the sentence, the line says at least 24 months, that should also be changed to 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Same on the previous page.
Two-year residences.
To be eligible for both. How can the damn court system get involved in those kinds of decisions? It just drives me nuts. I'd like to see a complete switch, change, and everything else in our judicial branch. It drives me nuts on these things.
Senator Schultz has proposed to do away with the court system.
Just as an amendment, a friendly amendment.
A friendly
a friendly technical amendment.
The other issue, Senator Leeds, on page 3, line 10, it refers to January 1st, 1991 through June 30th, 1991. We would like to see that return to the original bill where it says April 1st, 1991 through June 30th, 91. We recognize that it may be appropriate to make some sort of grant to the individual that was killed prior between January 1st and March 31st. The only reason we want for the original language is because it does not set a precedent to shortening the eligibility period, basically. Again, we're not opposed to a grant to this particular individual.
But I think that's all it should be done.
Appreciate it if it wasn't done via a permanent fund dividend, just so that the integrity of the basic eligibility requirements are not.
In other words, we only have one individual that died.
We have one individual that died.
And he died. His death was not during this time period.
His death was
in
was
March,
from January, between the time period January 1st to March 31st.
Okay.
But that's not the application period, and that's not the language, the logic
right.
that was used.
Okay.
And
how are we going to deal with him then?
We had recommended, if it could have been included in this bill, that you simply put in a grant provision to say that anybody that was killed prior to or during this period was entitled to an equivalent amount out of an amount equivalent to a permanent fund dividend. And we We also propose that draft language for the grant bill that's on the Senate side, Senate Bill 152. Again, it has nothing to do with, we don't want to see this individual paid, we just want to maintain the integrity of the dividend eligibility and application.
Okay, so where's your suggestion in having handling it, in this bill or in Senate Bill 52?
I would recommend that it be handled in 152, as opposed to this bill.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay. Is that bill going to move? Is that a bill that will? Do you think it will, Senator? Is that bill that's going to have to go somewhere?
Yeah.
It's the capital budget.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's the timeline question.
We heard the Senate's working.
I suspect we'll get it about May 20th, but other than that.
I have one other recommendation for request, and that is to make Section 2 take effect July 1st, 1991. Section 2 is the changes to the certification, and it takes effect prior to July 1st, 1991. Presumably, we would be required to change the current application forms on the street. Obviously, we don't want to do that, so we would just request that that particular section be effective July 1st, 1991, after the close of the 1991 application.
All right, so that would be a new Section 5 to the bill. Everything else will take effect immediately, still, except for that section.
And we do want to see the spouses and dependents left in there that we were working on.
Any other questions, Mr. Williams? Thank you, Mr. Williams.
No, I'd like to thank you for your professional testimony and patience with it.
Thank you.
You're the only one so far that's got me to pull a committee substitute back this year. Mr. Bush, would you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have. There were some questions raised about House Bill 41 and some of the changes made to the military. I'm not sure if anybody wants to testify on that or not.
Mr. Bush, would you... What would the ramifications, the legal ramifications, be to change the military requirement from 2 to 4 years on returns?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There, essentially, as Mr. Martin testified, Representative Martin testified earlier, the two-year residency, we understand, is going to be challenged. The two-year touch the earth rule is going to be challenged
by the feds.
To the extent that that challenge is going to occur, it's not going to occur on the basis that individual is military. It's going to be based on the fact that just any 2 year touch the ground is the equivalent, essentially, as you were arguing, of a 2 year residency or something like that, and that therefore it's a restriction on right to travel and it may be unconstitutional. I think it's defensible. I certainly wouldn't want to make any prediction on whether or not the 2 years could win. To single out a specific group for special treatment, for different special treatment, as proposed in House Bill 41, with a 4 years for military personnel, merely complicates the matter further. It becomes an additional issue that we then have to deal with, and whether or not you can have special treatment for this particular group. Now, traditionally, there is at least some case law that says military can be treated differently than other residents. So that certainly is another defensible point. It just essentially makes it even harder to defend the law. But I would hesitate to predict how that would work either. The current law is easier to defend than it would be under 41. That isn't to say that I don't think that 41 would be defensible. I certainly wouldn't tell you that it's unconstitutional. I don't think it necessarily is.
If the feds are going to challenge the 2 year, would they also probably challenge the 4 year? I mean, putting any kind of requirement like a year's requirement of touchdown?
I suspect that if the feds don't, someone will. There is going to be a challenge to that two-year touch the ground rule from somewhere, because whether it be the feds on behalf, theoretically, of military who are complaining right now, but we have students who are threatening to challenge it because it's difficult for college students. They say, we can't afford to fly home, and our parents have moved somewhere else, but this is still our house, or still our home, and we can't afford to fly to Alaska. You know, that sort of argument comes up. If someone is going to challenge it,
still a solution. One solution is to not have any two-year touchdown. You got to be here, or you don't get it. That would be one solution. But making every time you make an exception for one person, you got to add to it.
In the state, or you don't get it.
That you physically be in the state at the time that you apply.
Yep. That's not being done.
I just assume not deal with that issue. I know there's some people that would like us to change this also to the four-year. If it's all right with the sponsor, I'd rather not deal with the issue in this bill.
I would prefer that that was not the intent of this legislation, is to get into the eligibility requirements type thing and start changing that around. Well, I would prefer that that's not it. But I would like, or just to comment on this residency thing. The legislature has rolled over and died on every single solitary time a court, and these people are, out for lunch as far as I'm concerned on that. But they sat and they listened to these debates and all this kind of stuff, and then they come back and they rule that we can't do this. I would recommend that every time the court comes down and says you can't have a two-year residency requirement for whatever reason, then I would make it 1 year, 364 days. And then I would let them be challenged and challenged and challenged. I get them so damn sick of hearing these kinds of things coming forward that they finally say, okay, you can have some kind of residency requirement. But it's pathetic. It really is. Our court system has swung so far off the pendulum protecting our constitutional rights and misinterpretation.
That's the old school teacher in you coming out.
Of these things, and just grim, grim, grim.
Thank we you, still Dan. Have some.
You're lightning.
We have some motions that need to be made. There have been some proposed amendments by Mr. Williams.
Do I have the
bill is amended, and it'll
as
be
amended, or I think
yeah. Then that'll be a CS. Is there objection to? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Is there an objection to? The amendments as proposed. Mr. I'm sorry, Jeff, do you have anything to add?
No, sir, just here for observation.
Anybody? Okay, no objections. The amendment, we do have CS then before us.
Mr.
Chairman. Mr.
Representative White. I move that we send from the committee, House State Affairs Committee substitute as amended for Senate Bill 98, and those recommendations as
is there objections? Hearing no objections. House Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 98, State Affairs, as individual education. I would also like a motion to move out House Bill 41.
So moved.
I'd like to send it on to Finance, give the representative the opportunity to make any pitch that he would like to include in his, that is in his bill to the Finance Committee, just out of courtesy. There is a motion to move CS for House Bill 41, Military and Veterans Affairs, Front Committee with individual recommendations. Are there objections? Heard none. CS one for House Bill 141 is moved also. So we'll think about when you sign in those. Let me sign in first.
This is the same one?
Send Martin's on to Finance too, so he can make any pitches to include any parts that he wants out of his bill into this bill. See what I'm saying?
Just giving him. Senator Schultz just said he didn't want any amendments.
He doesn't, and that's why I'm putting do pass on this one and don't pass on that one. But I'm giving him the courtesy of moving his bill on to Finance with this one. He's signing it.
Might have had more questions, Mr. Chairman, but I knew we were moving the bill out.
Yeah.
Well, do you want me to call him back? I wanted a motion to move it, and nobody objected. So it's fine.
It was a surprise.
Yeah. You got a sign, so. Just putting all that?
What are you going to do with that bill after that?
Well, let's move it.
Yeah,
chairman said move it, let's move it.
Chairman's doing an expense.
I know.
Well, if the chair does that, then it doesn't move.
No.
Well.
It's purely a courtesy thing on my part.
Is that what this is, a courtesy deal here?
It's not how it'll be played, gentlemen.
I've not had any type of situation like this before.
Well, normally, you're right, normally when we had two bills, the same, we moved the one we wanted and we kept the other one. And, but that's because the person who had those bills weren't. We're not done.
We're not?
You can go anyways. The next meeting of the House State Affairs Committee will be Friday, April 26th. Well, here at that time, 198 relating to legislative sessions to be in the Matsu Valley.
Yeah.
House Bill.
Kinda.
By the way, there will be an amendment to that bill. It'll be leaving out of here, going to Cordova.
Yeah, I will have an amendment almost for that bill.
I expect your support on that. 271 relating to veteran status, Alaska Territorial Guard. We also have some subcommittee bills that will be taken up at that time.
Oh. Fine.
The judge kicked it out.
Yeah.